Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Lynn Bramer, WXRT morning DJ since 1991.
His motto, flesh fade and mortal trash fall to the residuary worm. You and I might as well rock and roll.
Owner of Lynn's Bin.
You have 937 messages.
There is a message for you.
All of which are marked urgent.
And most importantly, a diehard Cub fan.
The baseball season, a dance we do with memory. We've waited long enough. The winter is over when the umpires urge grown men to play.
It's Lynn Bramer with Matt Spiegel on Hit and Run.
Thank you, Eli Herskovich. With Chicago's own Screeching Weasel doing guest list on the way in, because my guest co-host every week reveals itself to be somebody different. It is Lynn Bramer this morning from 93XRT. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning, Matt Spiegel, your former Red Sox fan. Yeah, how you doing this morning?
I'm good. It's this former is really true. I don't feel it. I don't feel it like I used to as a fan that gets kind of whittled away once you know how the sausage is made, but
well,
not for you.
Yeah, you know, just like a spoiled Cub fan, you taste victory, you taste glory, and they hit a rough patch and they bottom out, and it's like, I'm done with you guys.
My dad has re-embraced the longtime loser Red Sox thing, which is ridiculous. Just because he did it for so long that it felt comfortable, he kind of enjoyed it, and then they won a whole bunch of times. But then, like, 2 years ago when they got knocked out by the Indians, he's like, same old Red Sox. I'm like, no, Dad, that's not how it works. You can't grab that mantle anymore.
Well, I have the perfect Easter Sunday baseball fantasy going.
Tell me.
Here I am with one of my favorite guys, musician, baseball fan, Matt Spiegel.
Uh-huh.
And after this, I go straight to Wrigley Field, join my son and my wife and the Rain Man of Chicago Cubs lore, Marty Leonard, my colleague at WXRT.
Oh, the best.
And we will nerd out for nine innings. My wife will keep score. Well, my wife and I both keep score. I'm a little more haphazard. She makes a note of anybody who stops by to say hi, which regular season ticket holders are in front of us. She'll do shorthand for a group of six older than me anyway, fans that are there every year in front of us. She just calls them the Codgers. The Codgers are here. And then there are people we can wave to, the Jim and Petey and, you know, various people. So she'll keep track of that. And then it's the inverted five for the foul out to the third baseman, the 6-4-3 DP. She's into it. She does all the pitching changes. I'm a little more casual about
it. Wow. But why do you bother to do it still? If she's doing it to that level of detail, is it something, is just to keep you in the game?
I have all these Chicago Cub pencils, like thousands of them. I got to use them. No, I like having a scorecard in my hand. I like being able to look down and before the big screen or somebody else can tell you, I can go, the guy's 0-for-3, hasn't hit it out of the infield. You can't second guess managers with the same kind of elan unless you got the scorecard in front of you.
So you arm yourself with the knowledge so you can argue better.
I arm myself with the knowledge of the scorecard. and move on from there.
This hour on The Score is brought to you by Continental Toyota. Experience the Continental Toyota difference with over 400 new and used vehicles in stock. Located on LaGrange Road and I-55 in Hodgkins, ContinentalToyota.com. All right, so like people call me a baseball romantic, and then there's you. And it's, where did that come from? By the way, that line right there that we heard in the open.
The winter is over when the umpires urge grown men to play.
Yeah. You know, in the context with which I heard it, which was you voicing something you'd written, right? For opening day for WGN this year.
Well, actually, I'd written it in 1992.
Oh, wow.
And it was actually written at a very dark period in my life. And I really needed the start of the baseball season. And I actually wrote it while I was on the air in just a fit of expression. And every year or so, I'll bring it out on opening day and read it on the air. And the producer, Bob Vorwald at WGN-TV, loves Lin's Bin, loves the stuff I've written about baseball. He said, how about this season you give us 6, 7, 8 Lin Braemer writings that we can put visual images to? So he took that to start with.
Wow.
He's got one I've done about the 1984 Cubs. He's got my tribute to Ernie Banks, which makes me cry just listening to it. So you'll hear some more and see some more of that during the course of the season on WGN TV.
Very cool. Look at the crossover.
There's my plan B. You know, this whole
in case the whole radio thing doesn't work out.
The rock and roll DJ thing. That's what do you get? 2, 3 years, 4 years at the most. I knew a guy when I first started working. He'd worked at 16 radio stations in 11 years because that's the way radio DJs have rolled over the years.
Seriously, do you have any idea? I think you do. It sounds like you do have any idea just how lucky you are to have been here. How long is it now for XRT?
Well, I worked behind the scenes as the music director from 84 to 90, and I actually came here on the promise of seeing the Cubs in the World Series in 1984. My former boss, Norm Weiner, I had gotten a competing job offer to do mornings at WLIR on Long Island, which turned into WDRE. There's a documentary about it right now. It's one of the first alternative rock stations in the country. And to sweeten the pot, because it certainly wasn't the money at the time, Norm said, tell you what, if you take this job as the music director of WXRT, I will take you to see the Cubs in the World Series. And as everybody knows, in 1984, the Cubs were unstoppable. They were a juggernaut. It paid off beautifully.
Remember when Durham made that routine play in the playoffs?
You know, he just scooped it up, ran over to first base, and you know they shut down Garvey, and the Cubs went on to beat the Detroit Tigers in the World Series. That's how I remember it.
Sure. That's exactly how it went down. Dan Petrie and Milt Wilcox were no match for Sutcliffe.
I've been at XRT since 84. 84 to 90, I was helping change the course of musical history on a daily basis, not to overemphasize anything. And then in 91, I was bribed to take over the morning show.
Okay, 91.
91.
So it's been a solid 28 years.
Solid
28
years. And interestingly, I started the morning show just as The Score was coming on the air.
How about it? Sharing those 1991 hallways, right? With
Tom
so Scher, many.
Mm-hmm. Tom Scher and Rick Geezer and a whole, I mean, the time I was there, a whole bunch of different morning. The Bull and the Bear, Doug Buffone.
Sure.
And, Norm Van Leer used to burst in the studio unannounced.
What's up, Lin?
Exactly.
Play me some Zeppelin.
He would just kick open the door and he'd say, I'm tired of sports. I want to play some rock and roll.
Nobody loved rock and roll more than Norm.
Play me some Stones. Yeah. And he'd come in and talk to me for a few minutes, then run back to the AM side and go back on The Score.
So did you get hot dogs from Mike North's place before he was on The Score? Were you one of those guys going down the street to get hot dogs?
Let me tell you something.
Yeah. Because for those who don't know, Mike North, a legendary midday guy who began with The Score, was a guy with a hot dog stand.
Well,
the guys from XRT who were planning to open start with The Score, Diamond Broadcasting, had gone repeatedly to get hot dogs from Mike North, and he just kept saying, you got to let me talk sports. You got to let me talk sports. Hey. Ended up buying time on his little radio station and trying, and then was given the midday show on The Score, and the rest is
Chicago radio history.
Yeah.
Did I go there for hot dogs?
Yeah.
Cholesterol was 320. I went there for hot dogs. Mike North would make me, he goes, you want the Ruin Me special? I go, what's the Ruin Me special? He goes, it's an omelet with everything in the kitchen. Polish sausage, Italian sausage, bacon, cheese, peppers, jardinera. Yes, we went in there all the time, and it's exactly as you said it happened. We were going in there all the time, and he would say, "You got to get rid of Bob Verdi. I can take over for Bob Verdi. I can do athlete's feats. I should be on the radio." And we'd say, "Mike, you need some kind of, you can't just jump in. People, you need to have some kind of experience." So Tom Couch, who was the production director, said, "You know, we have an AM station. It's you buy your own time and you sell your own advertising and you have an hour and do your own show. I'll produce it for you." And that's how we got to start.
Wow.
I didn't realize handicap show.
I didn't realize it was handicapping, which is, you know, she's back to doing.
Yeah.
So circle of life. That means his hot dog place is just around the corner.
I sure hope so. Because his mother-in-law made the best Italian beef in the city of Chicago. Grace.
BB's mother.
BB's mother in the back making Italian beef.
Unbelievable. We could just sit here and talk radio stories all day, but that's not why we're here. It's not why we're here, Lynn Bramer, for God's sakes. Where did your baseball romanticism come from? Why do you have it? Were you born with it? Was it passed down? I can trace my lineage exactly to that moment in 1941 where my dad sees Ted Williams go 4-for-5.
Ooh, I love Ted Williams.
Against the Philadelphia A's at Scheib Park, and he says, "That's my guy." And he becomes this ardent Red Sox fan in sort of a mutiny of his father, who was a Yankees fan, right? And so he passed that down through the whole family. I'm the youngest of five. Everybody's a fan. I have no choice but to fall in love with the game. How did it happen for you?
Well, I think part of it is generational. I was born in the year that Willie Mays caught the ball against Vic Wertz against the Cleveland Indians in the 54 World Series.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up at a time when you got up in the summertime, you were out of school, you had Frosted Flakes. And by 9 o'clock, you were out of the house with, you know, your Schwinn bicycle, with your glove put over the handlebars,
mm-hmm.
wearing, you know, in those days, early 60s, you were wearing dungarees that were too new to be actually able to bend at the knee. It was like you were on stilts when you walked.
Those are good to play in, probably.
And we played baseball or stickball or fast pitch or softball from 9 in the morning until it got too dark and we started hitting each other in the head with balls. So I played baseball every day of the summer, all day. Basketball, well, I grew up in New York, so you had to play some basketball. It was the law. But for me, it was baseball all day. And then there was Little League and getting your first Little League uniform. And when I started as a baseball fan, the only New York baseball team was the New York Yankees.
So they were all gone. The Giants. They were all gone.
Giants and Dodgers had gone. There were no Mets yet. So my earliest memories of baseball, probably 1960 when Mazeroski hit the series-ending home run where Yogi Berra is running back towards the fence, the wall in Pittsburgh. And I remember that the team I rooted for went to the World Series in 1960, 1961, 1962, 1963, 1964. So I thought the World Series meant the Yankees played some other team. And I was a big Mickey Mantle fan.
How could you not be?
And when I look back, I actually saw Mickey Mantle mostly in his declining years, you know, when he'd strike out with the bases loaded.
Sure, when the knees were gone and he could barely run.
Yeah, but it didn't matter. And I remember vividly picking up the paper every day to see what was happening in 1961 between Maris and Mantle. And it broke my little 8-year-old heart when Mantle went down at the end of the season with an injury and Maris went on to break the record.
Because you wanted Mantle.
I wanted Mantle to break the record. I was a Mickey Mantle guy.
It's a great movie, 61, that
it
Billy Crystal made on HBO. But you know, what it doesn't capture, I think, is the fan perspective that you're talking about, which I hadn't really thought about. Like when Sosa and McGuire are going for it in a more innocent time in 1998, and we ignore it. Is that Andrew Steen Dione behind Mark McGuire in that locker? Is that what that is? And we just kind of ignored that. Fans had a dog in that fight.
Yes.
So
you had favorites.
And so to describe it with Mantle and Maris, I think, you know, I've always thought about it as their rivalry, but I hadn't really thought about it too much from the fan perspective. You had your guy. You didn't want Maris getting in there and breaking the record.
Mantle had been there for years and years, and Maris was a newer member of the team. Forget the fact that he won 2 MVPs in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Mickey Mantle was the golden boy. He was the All-American hero. He was the switch hitter with the giant shoulders. And you know, a lot of kids were with me. And as 61, the movie demonstrated, it took a toll on Roger Maris's psyche and his health. And his hair fell out. And He was feeling the pressure, not only from the press and Yankees fans, but he was also feeling the pressure of knowing that nobody wanted him to be the guy that broke the record.
More so than Mantle. All right, so interesting to hear about your love for it comes from the playing more than it does the fandom. You got to the fandom in your answer, but the was really the playing.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I would much rather play than watch a game. I don't remember saying, hey, we got to go in and watch this game.
It just wasn't feasible, really, in my youth that often. It just wasn't. Like, we played more often. We played tennis baseball out there in the middle of the street in the suburbs where somebody would throw the ball and you'd hit it with a racket. Or my brother invented a game called Tenny Ball, which was baseball with a tennis ball.
Oh, that's fun.
And he had leaned a tabletop against the garage, and they put a big circle for the strike zone, and he would pitch from the end of the driveway to the garage, and I was allowed to be the designated outfielder every once in a while in the yard across the street waiting for a ball to be hit out that way. Well, but it's like, but going to this to a sandlot, as you describe it, or some place to play, just it stopped being feasible at some point in America. Really?
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, you know what it is.
There's not being enough kids to do it. And like, who has a pickup baseball game these days? It's so hard to see happening.
Well, the other thing is that organized youth baseball really took over and was so time consuming that, you know, after school, kids had practices in, you know, early April when it was 38 degrees.
Okay.
So I think more kids played organized baseball, where we did both. We played in Little League and we played every day.
Yeah.
But I think there are more distractions today, too. I mean,
well, there are.
You want to play a video game, or you want to go outside and play fast pitch?
Sure, you know? But even just for me, just a couple of decades later than you, growing up in the 70s and the 80s, we played basketball. That's what we did. It was just easier. You could, 2-on-2 is not a problem. So you got 4 guys, you got 6 guys, you got 8 guys, whatever, and then people had courts in their driveway.
Well, that's why we played stickball, because you could play 2-on-2. And the funny thing about stickball, you play in a schoolyard where somebody would have spray painted the strike zone, and the strike zone was for much older kids. So the top of your strike zone, it didn't matter. You didn't change the strike zone. The ball would skim the top of your head and a strike two, because that was the strike zone. You couldn't change the strike zone.
So a lot of free swingers were born out of those games.
But when I was a kid, some of my best friends were from Oak Park. And so every day we would take turns. I would be the Cubs, and they would be the Yankees, and then I would be the Yankees, and they would be the Cubs. So in the early 60s, mid-60s, I knew that Cubs lineup backwards and forwards. So when I moved here in late 84, 4 blocks from Wrigley Field, it kind of pickled my mind. I had already had this childhood attachment to the Cubs, and knowing that I could walk there, see a game, come back while everybody was snarled in traffic, make margaritas for my friends, sit on the back porch, and go, boy, traffic must be terrible. It was living the dream.
So that's beautiful. So that's why it happened so conveniently and comfortably for you to slide into the Cub fandom that has now overtaken your life.
Yeah, and you know, since I didn't grow up here, I didn't grow up with any animosity towards the Chicago White Sox. It was more a matter of convenience. I was 4 blocks from the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, my uncle grew up and brought up his family in Cary, Illinois. Diehard Sox fan. So whenever I got together with him, he was all about the White Sox.
Well, it can exist, and I, you know, there are certain weekends to embrace the tribalism. In my opinion, I like when they played twice a year, and you could just channel all of the meatballism that is there inherently directly into the matchup. So then you can kind of keep it free from invading your conversation the rest of the year. But it can exist without the negativity.
Let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. One of the greatest days in a baseball fan's life is to do the Chicago doubleheader. Cub game in the afternoon, Red Line, you know, if you're on the north side, Red Line down to Guaranteed Rate Field and catch the Cubs and then the Sox. And you put in a solid 7 hours of baseball.
Yeah, you have to do that at least.
What else is there?
At least 12 to 14 times in your life. You should accomplish that. It's 670 The Score. It's Hit and Run. It's Matt Spiegel hosting with you on a Sunday morning. My guest host is Lynn Bramer. I need to talk to you about this willingness you seem to have to endure the pain of baseball. Because what's so fascinating about it to me and will remain forever fascinating is you have to deal with the failure. You have to. If you're a player, if you're a fan, you have to deal with the losing and come back the next day. And you have a willingness to do that, which borders on gluttony, that I need to discuss with you.
I have a serious problem.
I think so. We'll talk about it next on 670 The Score.
Mark Ditmar throws. Here's a swing and a high fly ball.
Welcome back in on 670 The Score. It is Hit and Run. Bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats playoff hockey in Chicago. Catch your Central Division champion Chicago Wolves as they battle Grand Rapids in the first round of the Calder Cup playoffs. For up-to-date playoff information or tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Lynn Bramer, the morning man from WXRT, is my guest co-host this week on Hit and Run.
Are you playing Gimme Shelter? Because you already know that I have designated it as the greatest song ever written.
I need you to tell me why that is the case. Because I disagree. It's a good song. Very, very good song. Why is Gimme Shelter the greatest song ever written?
Well, you have to understand, it goes back to a joke I had when I was music director. Every week with the program director, we sit down, we listen to a bunch of albums, and almost every week I'd say, you got to listen to this song from the Brandos, Gettysburg. This is the greatest song ever written. And it became a running joke.
Uh-huh.
And even on the air on the XRT morning show, periodically I'll say, coming up next, the greatest song ever written. And I feel like whatever song it is I'm picking, whether it's Van Morrison, Into the Mystic, or something obscure like Storyville, Good Day for the Blues, that I can back it up at that moment, at that time. But here's the thing.
You could argue for that for whichever song you're setting up.
Well, it also is a place in time. You know, music
yes.
is fluid. It changes. Your mood changes, where you're at mentally or physically. But here's the thing with the Rolling Stones, Gimme Shelter.
Yeah.
That is the song more than any other that ended the 60s. It ended the flower power Woodstock,
mm-hmm.
500,000 people get together and have a great time and nobody gets hurt.
Right.
Because Gimme Shelter is the song. Gimme Shelter is the movie.
The documentary about Altamont.
It documents when it all went south for the Rolling Stones at Altamont.
Uh-huh.
It came out in 1969. And it's also containing the greatest performance by a backup singer.
Mary Clayton. Mary Clayton.
They called her at 1 o'clock in the morning.
And she was pregnant.
And said, we need you. We need you to come in. We need you to do this. And she left it all out on the playing field. I mean, she took it to the limit. And the sad, dark part of this story is that she had a miscarriage. And some people think it's because I don't think medically this holds up, but some people said, well, she exerted herself so much at that recording session for hours trying to get that backup Gimme Shelter part down.
That whale.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So that's in your head. When you hear it, you're thinking, oh, my God, this note, this vocal performance killed a baby.
This gave up a life. But it really is a signpost, a landmark in the history of rock and roll. Because after Altamont, your feeling of, you know, everybody's together, everything's going to be great,
right,
kind of dissipated, started to fall apart.
Why are we fighting? What for?
We don't want to fight.
Uh-huh.
Come on.
You think it was a bad idea that they hired the Hell's Angels as security? You think that was a problem?
I think there are a few problems. You hire the Hell's Angels as your security.
Yeah.
You let them take LSD,
uh-huh.
and somebody provides them with pool cues. I mean, the Hell's Angels punched out Marty Ballin in the Jefferson Airplane, knocked him out on stage.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Because he was telling him to get off the stage.
You know, when Tributosaurus became a Jefferson Airplane, we didn't do any of the Starship stuff. When Tributosaurus became Jefferson Airplane, we reenacted that moment from Altamont on the stage. We did Tributosaurus Theater, and we had our sound man dress up as a Hell's Angel, which was not difficult. And he came up there and knocked out a singer on stage.
Oh, you know, Jefferson Airplane. airplane. You know what, Starship, you could have done? You could have done Blows Against the Empire, because that is an amazing album. And it really wasn't the Starship that people came to, the We Built This City fake Starship.
Right.
Because that wasn't really the Jefferson Starship, but that is a magnificent sci-fi classic.
All right, so I get it. So Altamont leads you to Give Me Shelter.
It's Altamont, it's the year, it's the content of the song. Mm. Just everything about it says to me, this is not only an amazing rock and roll song, which it is, but it also carries with it a lot of weight.
Have you ever found a way to connect the end of the 60s with the 69 Cubs and that collapse? you ever found a way to say that the innocence and the dream of communal possibility died along with the black cat that ran in front of Santo at Shea?
There was a lot of stuff. As Mary Dixon and I like to say on the air when we're previewing 1969 in flashback, we like to say 1969, a lot of stuff happened.
A lot of stuff happened.
1969, what a year for the Chicago Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was all Leo DeRocher's fault, right? He just wore them to a nub.
I don't believe he played. Was it Andy Pafko? He didn't play enough. Was that right?
No.
What am I thinking of?
Andy Pafko.
No. What am I thinking of? Who didn't play enough? It was Murph would tell me. Where's Murph? Well, he's probably on another radio station even as we speak. So forget that. But you know, somebody didn't play
Don
enough.
Don Young?
No.
Jim Hickman?
No.
Pafko is a generation or
right,
so
right,
before
later.
That.
Yeah. My bad. I'll figure it out.
What are you not playing? I mean, in those days, your starting lineup was your starting lineup. It varied very little. It was,
DeRocher, he didn't play the backups enough. He just kept grinding the starters over and over and over and over. And
pitching staff was worn out.
They never could recover.
And of course, there was the black cat walking in front of Ron Santo. Yeah. That changes the course of history
seemed to be a rather big deal. All right. So you have a willingness as a Cub fan, Lynn, to accept and deal with the pain that is a part of baseball and a part of losing in Cubs fandom. And I have seen that extend to your fantasy baseball existence where you, because we've been in a fantasy baseball league years now.
Decades.
The Lindbergers, your team, perennially one of the worst clubs.
Yes.
In the fantasy baseball
You'd have to go
universe.
Back to the strike-shortened season of 1994 to find the Lindbergers victorious with an asterisk.
Oh, you won the strike-shortened year.
And then it wasn't until...
Paul Popovich. Thank you. They didn't play Paul Popovich enough. That's it.
I don't think that was the problem.
Yeah, I think it was.
No, it was not the Popovich issue.
I choose to blame that.
You guys are crazy.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, you seem to take to the losing with remarkable aplomb, with an acceptance, I wouldn't say an eagerness, an assumption of losing. Is that fair to say?
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
I grew up with two brothers. I am one of the most competitive people you'll ever meet, whether it's playing cards or these days I took up golf because I got too old for sports, whatever it is, I'm very competitive. And the idea that you think I embrace losing with eagerness is just plain crazy.
Okay.
It hurts me physically losing. I take Cub losses, even in seasons when they're 20 games out of first place. It affects my mood. And I'm not alone. I'm sure there are people listening right now that have the same kind of sickness where you want the team that you love to win no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's real baseball or fantasy baseball, I mean, I put a smile on it, my friend, but the Lindbergers' vaunted incompetence is nothing I wanted to brag about or embrace.
All right, so maybe that's my misread, is that it's your ability to turn that into humor and your ability to turn that pain into acceptance and still make you want to put your pants on in the morning is what I should be noting.
Well, think about this. We've done 26 opening day live broadcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And for 95% of that time, all the parody songs we've written, all of the tributes, the prayers, all of the elements to go into that marathon 7-hour live broadcast where people start drinking beer at 7 o'clock in the morning revolved around our ability to make fun of the team we followed and loved. Because all the lyrics in those early parody songs were not batting the Cubs on the back necessarily.
No.
They were turning a frown upside down musically and lyrically.
So how did winning the World Series for the Cubs in 2016 and the Lindberghers winning the Fantasy Baseball League last year?
Coincidence?
Yeah, yeah. just 2 years later. But how did the winning change your relationship with the game and the team?
Well, I think the winning the World Series for me and for a lot of Cub fans provided us with a little bit of a cushion, a little bit of a buffer zone that we could take misadventure a little bit better than we had in the past.
Mm-hmm.
That we had something to lean on. But I don't think it's really affected the way I view winning and losing. I still want them to win all the time. Yesterday, I'm watching the game and, you know, what does it say that our bar is now so low on Yu Darvish that he gives up back-to-back jacks in the first inning? And we say, I look pretty good after the first inning.
He settled in nicely.
Hey, for three innings.
He went 5 innings for 3 straight starts for his first time as a Chicago Cub.
So, you know, you're sitting there, you're watching that, and I think my to-the-point tweet yesterday was, I did not enjoy this game one bit.
Yeah, I mean, the back-to-back homers, and then it's 3-0, and then Darvish out after 5.
And then Greinke's pitching for the D-backs.
And then it's 6-0.
Yeah.
And then good night, everybody.
How about the Chris Bryant hopefully slump-busting 2 win-dated doubles in back-to-back days?
Take him.
Take him. And I'll tell you what, the first one where the guy kind of tripped, it looked like Keystone Cops.
Hmm.
That was comedy.
You know, the winning as a little bit of a cushion, I experienced this in conversation with 2 friends, 2 ardent Cub fan, longtime Chicago and diehard baseball fan friends. In conversation, we were talking about the ugly start just a couple of weeks ago. They happen to be musicians, but it really the point is these hardcore Cub fans, and we're talking about the ugly start, and then one of them says, you know, I got to tell you, if one is all we get, at least I got that one. he volunteered it. I'm like, really, huh? That's that feeling in there. And the other one said, yep, I got it too. Now, maybe it's a product of age. Those guys, late 40s, early 50s, they'd waited a long time, but they finally got that one. We were talking in broad strokes about how, you know, Theo and Jed having, you know, failed so miraculously at the free agent class a couple of years ago. By the way, Tyler Chatwood on the mound today. Brandon Morrow, if you hadn't heard, had a setback in his rehab, and there is officially no timetable on him.
No timetable does not sound good to me.
So with this possibility that the Cubs just get one title out of this window, which of course is not assured by any stretch, is that enough? And the very, very quick answer was yes.
The answer is no. You're talking to a guy here who has a calendar. Well, I don't have an office anymore. But when I had an office, I had a calendar, a desk calendar in front of me, and every October has a big red magic marker through it because I don't want to make the mistake of saying, oh, yeah, no, I'll MC that or I'll host that and then find out, you know, it's game 5 of the World Series or it's the deciding game in the championship series. I can't make any mistakes. So when I plan a trip to Italy, it's after November 4th. I take no chances. And I don't really stop hoping for the home team until they are actually mathematically eliminated. Just the way I am.
Sensible. 670, the score is where you are. We're leading you up to the Cubs pregame at 12:35.
Oh, yeah.
The lineup is in. Albert Almora will play center. Chris Bryant is playing left. Anthony Rizzo bats third and plays first. Javier Baez, your cleanup hitter. And at short, and Bodie's at second. Contreras batting fifth. David Bodie playing second. Zobrist in right. Tyler Chatwood in the 8th spot. Mark Zagunas 9. So no Jason Hayward here today.
No Jason Hayward.
Against Robbie Ray, the very tough lefty for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
You want to hear a really meaningless statistic?
Sure.
Ben Zobrist, he's played 3 or 4 positions this year. His fielding percentage across the board is 1,000.
It's good. He's good at stuff.
He's good. He's solid.
You know who that guy is? That guy is next year, and we'll see it maybe this year, is Descalso. Descalso has played everywhere. Descalso, during the course of a playoff series for the Cardinals, played every position in the infield at one point. And he can play both corner outfield spots. And I think he's played center before, too, if I'm not mistaken. I'll have to check.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Did you see Descalso coming? I mean, did you see this really hot start? Was there something in his past performance that led you to believe, okay, here's a guy that's going to flirt with 300 during the course of a season?
He made big changes to his swing with the help of a guy who actually has now ended up on the White Sox developmental staff as a hitting instructor. So Descalso worked with this guy over the course of the last couple of years and has revamped his swing, part of the launch angle revolution. And that's why the Cubs went out there and got him. And he has played center in his career, right, Eli? Yeah, he's a guy. He could do a Bert Campanaris one day, Descalso, and play all nine.
You know what Chicago baseball player I'm excited about?
Who's that?
On the Chicago White Sox, Ryan Cordell. Have you looked at this guy's numbers in the minor leagues? I mean, he, single A, he's like a 380 batter. Triple A, he's like a 340 batter. The guy can straight out rake.
I did not expect to get a Ryan Cordell report from Lynn Bramer this morning.
You need to keep an eye on Ryan. I mean, the White Sox got a lot going for them offensively. But don't discount Ryan Cordell. You talked to Bill James about performance in the minor leagues and how it translates to the major leagues. He's somebody to keep an eye on.
Noted. The word smithery from Lynn Bramer on the Cubs is rivaled by his colleague at XRT. We'll play you an example of why when we come back next. It's Hit and Run on The Score, the sister station of XRT. Keep it right here. The bottom of the hour on The Score was brought to you by Chicagoland Papa John's. Chicagoland Papa John's is offering free pizza this weekend. Buy one pizza at regular price. Get a second pizza of equal or less value for free. Use promo code FREEPIZZADAY on the Papa John's app or online at papajohns.com. That's promo code FREEPIZZADAY. Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run Sunday mornings on 670 The Score. My co-host is Lynn Bramer, the morning man from WXRT. Returning the favor as Tributosaurus has been the house band for XRT's opening day broadcast for the last, I don't know, 9 years, 10 years, something like that.
You know, there are a handful of people that I owe everything to. You're one of them.
Oh, appreciate it. But, you know, the regular guy, always part of the festivities.
Yes, he is.
And if people have not heard the regular guy's prayer in advance of a Cubs season, they should hear this year's, especially from last week's home opener. This is the regular guy on XRT.
Happy opening day, everybody. How you doing? We are being tested. I would say we're being tested this year. So, let's get right to it. You don't have to get down on your knees for this, by the way. There's no up and down. All right. Our Cubbies, who play at Wrigley, hallowed be thy names. Hartnett and Bafko, Sutcliffe and Santo, Fergie, Sarge Matthews, and Rhino and Andre, Maddox and Rebel, and even old Ron Say. Well, Lord, here we are at Yahtzee's on another opening day, and 9 games into the season, boy, do we need to pray. The prophet said this would be a year with a new sense of urgency. But instead, what we're faced with is a Cubby state of emergency. But there is hope. For no more do the boys need to travel in Rome. Because it's opening day on the north side of Chicago and the Cubs finally play a game at home. For 10 days they've wandered the wilderness, lost in darkness in a desert of despair. Texas, Atlanta, Milwaukee, it's more than any Cub can bear. Long nights on the road have left us fans shaken in our true blue belief. Anyone would be a doubter after watching those bums who pitch in relief. But today, after the trials and tribulations and lousy defeats, the promised land is in sight. Hey, it's right across the street. Yes, Lord, you've given us what we need to get us out of this Cubby gloom. It's opening day on the north side of Chicago, and the Cubs finally play a game at home. The green grass of hope and the promise of Ivy will renew our Cubby faith. Just don't let the bullpen blow another lead in the eighth. But we believe in the Cubs from the ground up to the hat on our dome. It's opening day on the north side of Chicago, and the Cubs finally play a game at home. So come on, everybody, let's pray. Oh, Russell Osuter, oh, Jerry Morales, oh, Jody Mark Grace, oh, Steve Ontiveros, oh, Moreland, oh, Durham, oh, Manny Trio, oh, Dunston, oh, Holtzman, oh, you beautiful bum, Frank Castillo. Down on our knees to Ernie and Billy, we pray to the Smiths, Dwight, Lee, and Willie. And congratulations, Lee, for getting in the Hall of Fame. Oh, holy Harry, Mayor of Rush Street, we pray that you and Jack and Vince and Lou and Ronnie and Ernie and everybody who ever lived and actually died with the Cubs can gather at your right hand today and say those most holy and sacred words. Hey, hey, holy mackerel, it might be, it could be, this one's got a chance. Oh, no, oh, no. Cubs win, Cubs win, Cubs win. From Tinker to Evers to Chance, amen.
Oh, he could slide neath the tag of the shortstop on the bag. The Baez dives, he zigs when others zag. But last night, the game went 10 with no help from the bullpen. Would travel, they'll arrive, I don't know when. Wake up, sleepy team. Oh, what can it be? Do a day game believer with a World Series dream.
That's a little taste of the opening day broadcast from WXRT. I don't mind talking over that singer. He's mediocre.
No, he's a good singer.
The regular guy is who you heard from XRT. His movie reviews have been a part of the broadcast over there for, what, 20 years? 30 years?
I think 30 years.
Crazy.
At least. Movie reviewer. And a very close friend of the regular guy, Marty Leonard's, is actually the biggest.
Is he Motz? He might be Motz.
No, people have thought that Johnny Mars, DJ at XRT, was Motz, a character, a recurring character in the regular guy's reviews. But Marty is, in fact, the biggest Cub fan I've ever met. I mean, he has instant recall. Now, in his prayer, he mentions Frank Castillo.
Yes.
Frank Castillo is the closest I've ever come to seeing a no-hitter in person.
8 2/3.
8 2/3. I'm in aisle 239 with the season ticket holders at the time. And I started to well up a little bit because I'd never seen a no-hitter. And, of course, it didn't happen.
It's close.
Frank Castillo.
You brought
me to the brink.
I was at the Mark Burley perfect game.
Ooh.
Broke me to tears, the Mark Burley perfect game. Because as happens with baseball, it's about that point in your life. Things have been bad for me. All of a sudden, they were looking back up for me. I had no expectations of being in the job that I was suddenly at a year prior to that. And there I was sitting like 12 rows behind the plate for a perfect game. Are you freaking kidding me?
That's why I love the open today with the fever pitch quote about they always play. And if it rains, you know what? They let you come back to another game.
They make it up to you. Who else does that in your life?
Who else does that? Who else makes it up to you? I have to explain to people that Jimmy Fallon in Fever Pitch, a little close to the bone.
Understood. He's Lynn Bramer. He's my guest co-host here on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. We'll come back. Some news about the minor leaguers for the White Sox. A couple of guys that matter and we will be paying attention to. Some news just broke a little while ago, and the Cubs made a roster move as well. We'll explain those to you and roll on with Lynn Bramer, including the best way to wean your children into baseball fandom. If you need help, Bramer has a magic method. We'll share with you next on The Score. Lynn Bramer, indeed, in with me, Spiegs, for another 35 minutes or so. Appreciate the time.
Thanks, Spiegs. It's a dream come true, a little sports talk radio from a guy who shouldn't be doing it.
You mean me? How dare you, sir? How dare you? Happy Easter, Lynn. And you have a cookie and a note there from our mutual boss, Mitch Rosen, wishing you a happy Easter. I was given a box of matzah.
Who gave you the jerky? That's right, tough guy.
Yeah, right. A jerky I got somewhere else. But Mitch gave me a note and a box of matzah so I can celebrate Passover as we are here together.
In a manner befitting a gentleman like you.
Yeah, it's true. Have you ever had the gluten-free matzah? Delicious.
Why would I have gluten-free matzah?
Because it's better than the regular matzah.
I don't believe you.
No, I'm serious. Don't shake your head at me, Eli Hershkovich.
It's incorrect.
No,
false statement.
Have you tried it?
Yes,
hate
it.
It tastes like a Pringle. I'm serious. If you salt it a little, dip it in the salt water, the gluten-free matzah tastes like Pringles.
Give me the traditional stuff all day long.
Yeah, give me the gefilte fish with the horseradish. Don't give me the gefilte fish without the horseradish.
Hey.
Cannot abide the gefilte fish with the horseradish. I'm all in.
Here's the most important question. Your matzah balls, sinkers or floaters? Sinkers is the answer.
I didn't know what the answer was, but I was going to say sinkers. Uh-huh. And I'm not just jumping on the back of Matt Spiegel,
right.
And I mean that in a metaphorical sort of way.
Uh-huh.
I believe in the sinkers.
Speaking of sinkers, Jose Quintana's been throwing it a little bit more lately.
Yeah. Hey! How are
you? Yeah, you know what I like about...
Come on!
You know, even when Quintana was struggling, he would miss by inches. When Tyler Chatwood is struggling, he misses by yards.
Well,
a little bit outside.
A little bit outside. Yeah, that one hit the mascot. Let's see what happens with Tyler Chatwood today.
Could be an Easter miracle.
It's not been a good weekend for the free agent acquisitions of 2018. Although Darvish, he ended up going 5. He struck out 7, I believe.
See, this is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Lower the bar and back-to-back jacks. Let's put it in the rearview mirror. He put it all together after that.
Do you know what sports comp keeps coming to mind for you, Darvish, in this town?
I'm afraid to ask.
No, let's think about it. Who is somebody with a world full of talent that you just kept wondering, man, if you could just put it together, just put it just together just a little bit. It's so close. Let's give him this help. Let's give him that help. Let's give him this help. Let's give him that help. Maybe almost.
A pitcher?
No.
A hitter?
A quarterback.
The star of the TV reality series?
Yes. So there's just a little bit of Cutler Darvish comps floating around there. Just a tiny little bit.
Oh, they have great arms, man. They both have great, great arms.
Yu Darvish has never pitched up to the quality of his stuff. He has never produced up to the quality of his stuff.
Even pre-Cubs?
Correct. Even those very good years in Texas, even those were not up to the excellence of his stuff. It blows people away.
If I could throw the ball 98 miles an hour in the latter innings of a game I'm pitching, I feel like I could get stuff done.
I want to know what kind of pitcher Lynn Bramer was in high school, because he was a pitcher in high school. I want to know what kind of career he has in some parallel universe and in the bizarro earth that's out there, who Lynn Bramer is. But before we get to that, let's tell you about the news of the day. Both teams have made some moves. So Zach Birdie and Luis Basabe, where are they going, Eli? Class A. Low A Kannapolis for both of them. Now, Zach Birdie had been recovering from Tommy John, had been shut down last year in the Arizona Fall League. Zach Birdie, former number one first-round pick, I believe 2016. But Birdie, if he's going to Low A Kannapolis, if he's healthy and he can throw, he may make a meteoric rise this year. I mean, they've talked about him And you know how it is with young pitchers these days. If you can throw and you've got it, they'll just go ahead and climb you.
Where are Lynn's stats on Birdie? I want to hear some of those.
I know. He was giving us Ryan Cordell information.
I was just looking up Dylan Maples because he's got a heater, and his numbers right now are not so good.
But Zach Birdie, Rick Hahn had been talking about him last year, even at the GM meetings, that just want him to get back throwing regularly at a very long rehab process. He cleared every hurdle we had for him at the end. So Zach Birdie going to Lowe Canopolis, and Basabe, Luis Robert Basabe, broke the hamate bone in his hand 2 months ago or so. So he comes back and they both go to Lowe Canopolis, and then we'll see where they go. If they can establish health and regularity there, then they'll kind of move them up a little bit. Also, a little more Sox news from the minors. A minor injury last night for Luis Robert. Minor one, but it happened. Luis Robert has a sore left hand. Our own Bruce Levine is reporting. Was removed from the game for precautionary reasons last night. He is day-to-day. It's being called a contusion of the left hand. Luis Robert is my favorite player in the White Sox farm system.
Why is that?
Because he has... You remember when certain athletes would show up and you'd be like, oh my God, that guy can do everything.
Right.
The first time you saw Bo Jackson, the first time you saw Eric Davis, the first time you saw Yasiel Puig a few years ago.
Five tool players.
You bet.
Ty Griffin.
And some of them developed and some of them did not. The first time I saw Ron Gant, I was like, oh my God, look at that guy. He can do absolutely everything.
Well, he had a great year or two, didn't he?
He had a few great years.
He had 30 home runs 1 year.
He had several great years. Who was, Luis Robert is one of those kind of athletes. Everything he does remarkably well and gracefully, and lately has shown a lot of potential with the stick. And I believe that he has a shot to catapult through the system. He's been, you know, we'll see how far along he can go. And the Cubs, meanwhile, made a move. They called up Alec Mills today, which reeks to me of backup in case Tyler Chatwood has a terrible start today. And there is a TBD on Thursday right now for who's going to start for that game. But Alec Mills, a guy that they have trusted to start games in the past, will be here today. Randy Rosario going down to the minors. He's one of two guys with options, was Rosario left on this team. So there are your nuggets for the day.
That's some huge news.
Well, you know, maybe not. All right, Pally. Lynn Bramer, I have a child who does not really care about baseball when I take him to the game. It is heartbreaking. I have tried many different ways. The most success that I have had is through your methodology that you taught me, that you used on your own child and worked remarkably well, right?
Well, here's the thing. Behavioral scientists will tell you that bribing your child is the wrong thing to do. So let me tell you how the wrong thing to do actually works. When a kid goes to the game, he's mostly, you know, 3, 4, 5, maybe even 6. Baseball, 3 hours sitting in a seat for a kid, it's rough. Sometimes, you know, if you're not really close to the field, it's kind of hard to see the ball off the bat. So we employed the M&M game, which focuses the kid on the game because you say, all right, every time a Cub gets a hit, you get one M&M. Anytime there's a home run, you get 4 M&Ms. Of course, if it's a 1-0 no hitter, you've ruined the kid forever. He has no interest in the game for the rest of his life. But the M&M game has yielded some benefits.
Okay, so
I think my kid was going to be a baseball fan no matter.
But what happens on defense? See, I adjusted, I augmented it. Maybe it's a product of our modern day instant gratification society. But I went ahead and said, a strikeout for the pitching staff also brings an M&M.
I have done that as well. Okay. To keep it on both sides of the field.
Yeah, I think I went. I think I simplified further. I think I went any base runner. So a walk, I went ahead and gave an M&M as well.
The thing that you can't do is you can't cave in and go, okay, here's a handful of M&Ms, because then you remove the whole torturous experience for the kid. You really want to torture your kid early at a ball game, uh-huh, so they get used to the endemic an endemic failure that is part of baseball and watching baseball and playing baseball.
Yeah, that's right. There's torture. There's inherent torture. So the slow parsing of the M&Ms.
Oh, no. That was an error. That's not a hit. He said moops.
Well, you know, that can be helpful. So folks should learn that and use that. The M&M game can be extremely helpful. You think your kid was going to be one, though, no matter what, huh?
Yeah. Well, he went to 15 games before he was one. And actually, that's the best time to take a kid to a ball game, before they can walk, when they're in the car seat and they're just sleeping because the crowd noise is ambient. Once they start to walk.
Yeah, that's the best time to take them anywhere.
Right.
Best time
right.
to travel with
restaurants,
them.
When
they're
concerts.
Luggage. When they're merely luggage
they're
is
merely
the best time.
A pile of luggage. But once they walk, then you start going up and down the ramps. And the ramps at Wrigley Field are terrifying because they can easily slip through those bars. I mean, the banisters.
Oh, God.
You got to think about that.
Uh-huh.
But you got the up and down the ramp, and you got the right field corner. Here comes a train. Hey, look, here comes a train. You got to work all the angles at Wrigley Field. And when all else fails, try to avoid the cotton candy, because that's just a mess.
All right. So when I was young, Lynn, I was not a very good baseball player, but I did have a few moments there in Little League, and really it was just after there. I had about 25 minutes one afternoon when I thought I was going to be a submariner. Like,
wow.
I was watching probably Kent Tekulve, Dan Quisenberry. Those were my guys. Those were my comps. And I started throwing that way, and I thought I was hitting the mitt every time. I sensed that there was some movement on my pitches that I thought was some kind of miracle.
Unhittable.
But I think it was just that I was falling off the mound, and so it looked like the pitches were moving.
That's one way to go.
I don't think they themselves are actually moving. There certainly was no educated snap of the wrist or manipulation of the baseball within my fingers. It was just I told myself that it was kind of a miracle, and I thought I was gonna go. You actually were a pitcher and could pitch pretty well, right?
Well, my freshman year in high school, the starting pitcher got bursitis, and I had been working out with the JV team. And the coach in a gym, a fastball looks much faster. And I was working out with the JV team, and it was one of those things where the coach looked over and said, who's that guy? What's he doing? And actually, I think that the year I became a competitive swimmer added 5 miles an hour on my fastball because it built up my shoulders and my arms.
Maybe that's what they're doing at Driveline Baseball when all these guys go away and they come back and they're throwing 5 miles an hour faster.
If I were a coach these days, I'd say get in the pool. Get in the pool, start swimming laps. But I was the starting pitcher for my high school freshman, sophomore, junior, senior year, MVP junior, senior year. And my brother, who was a much better baseball player than I was MVP his junior, senior year. So the Bramer brothers had the MVP locked up for 4 straight years. But let me just issue this disclaimer.
That's awesome. That's genuinely awesome.
It was a very small school in a crappy league.
Doesn't matter, man. You had that experience. You had feeling of being the star pitcher on your team, the MVP on your team as a starting pitcher. You had that feeling. This is my ball. I'm going out there. I'm going to do this.
There is no greater feeling for somebody who can throw a baseball than walking up on the mound and saying, okay, this is all me right now. Let's see what I have. And facing each batter,
mm-hmm.
and you know, when your fastball is feeling good. One of the things about high school pitching, I think most high school pitchers go through their career with some degree of soreness in their arms. I just remember my arm being a little bit sore for almost every game I pitched, except at the beginning of the season. And since my hero as a pitcher was Sandy Koufax, there was no, okay, I'm just going to cruise here. It was throw the ball.
As hard as you can.
As hard as you can. In fact, batting practice, if I would mistakenly hit my brother with a pitch, I wouldn't ask if he was okay. I would say, was it fast? Did it hurt? Those were important to me to see if I was getting the snap on the fastball.
See, that feeling as a pitcher of going out there and being like, this is mine. It is so unique. It's like, I suppose the comps are, you know, a basketball player with the shot clock winding down and the ball in your hands and it's yours, but you still have teammates you can pass to. Or on the free throw line.
Or the host of Hit and Run. Where
you got to toss to a brick and you're already 3 minutes late.
Exactly.
Mm. Or the golfer, right? It's
individual.
Right? It's
individual achievement.
It's Tiger knowing on the 16th green that he has three holes left and he's the only one who can blow this or finish it.
Right.
Depending on how it goes.
No, it's a great feeling. And to this day, the most confident thing I can do physically is throw a baseball. To this day, still play catch. Still love throwing a baseball whenever I can, which doesn't explain how I sent a photographer's assistant to the ER throwing out the first pitch at White Sox Park.
You hit them?
Well, I didn't mean to hit them. Don't say you hit them like Lynn just reared back. And what happened was it was a little bit outside. And whoever it was.
So you and Fitty
John
sent,
Garland, I think, was the designated catcher for the ceremonial first pitch. It skipped by him because here's the thing. If you're catching a ceremonial first pitch, you don't want the guy throwing the ball to put you on the DL, right, in the injured list. So the ball skipped past him, bounced a couple times, and hit the photographer's assistant in the knee. Now, it was XRT Day at White Sox Park, so we had like 50 listeners to come with us, and we were in the picnic area. And part of the deal was I went up with Gene Honda to do the announcements in the next inning. So, you know, I had to go, now batting? Paul Konerko. And that was a blast for me. But Gene Honda, who I've known for years and years and years, had the headphones on. He's listening to all the communications in the ballpark. And he says to me, hey, Lynn, that girl you hit with the ball, she's on her way to the ER. And I'm like, and I've known Gene for all these years, so I think he's just messing with me. And I go, get out of here. You know, she's not going to the ER. She was going to the ER. She went to the ER. And the next day, I called a florist in Bridgeport to send her flowers.
Oh, God.
And he called me back and said, yeah, we can't deliver the flowers. I go, why not? Because she's at home on crutches. She got herself some really nice front row tickets for John Mellencamp. I'll tell you that.
There you go. That's the currency that's available.
Here's the weirdest part. The White Sox has never invited me back to throw out the first pitch. Did it three times, and that was the last time.
Well, I think they can't afford the ER bills.
Liability. A little bit too much confidence in throwing a baseball.
All right. Well, it's a little bit of a drop from high school MVP to damaging a photographer's assistant at the point of hospitalization.
I didn't like doing
that. It's Hit and Run on 670 The Score. One more segment with Lynn Bramer. In about 20 minutes, we'll look ahead to the Dodgers when we talk to Bill Plunkett from the Orange County Register. And we're a little more than an hour away from Cubs pregame right here on 670 The Score.
Everybody up all the way around this ballpark. The 3-2 umber pitch. Strike three called. Ball gets away from Pierzynski. He has pitched a perfect game. Umber has pitched a perfect game on Saturday afternoon. They mob him between the mound and home plate. His first win this year is a perfecto.
I'm going to get down. I'm going to get down. Or I can't work. There goes.
A convergence of different things here, Lynn Bramer. This is the anniversary of Philip Umber's perfect game. I was not driven to tears at Philip Umber's perfect game. It was Mark Burley's perfect game. But it might have happened if I was there, but it wasn't. That happened on this date several years ago.
It was also the day Derrick Rose tore his ACL. So.
Oh man.
Wait, the first time?
Correct.
In the playoffs against the Sixers. When Tom Thibodeau still had him in the game, I think they had a 9-point lead, memory serves. Good stuff. Thanks, Eli.
I just remember I was there when Derrick Rose injured himself twice, so I had to stop going to Bulls games.
Yeah,
the whole team would be decimated.
You're the problem. And then here, the Grateful Dead doing Cumberland Blues right here. This version of Cumberland Blues right here is live at the Auditorium Theater in Chicago in October of 1971.
That is pre-XRT history. The B-side of that 45 that the Cubs are giving out with specially priced tickets Wednesday night for Grateful Dead night was...
Brown-Eyed Women, live at the Auditorium Theater on May 13th, 1977.
An XRT show.
How about that?
Grateful Dead night at Wrigley Field Wednesday night. Of course, I'll be there. I'm everywhere.
Wednesday night, fans will join the celebration if you want. You got to purchase a special ticket offer to see the Cubs take on the Dodgers. So that's Grateful Dead Night. You can get there, MLB.com/Cubs/tickets/specials/Grateful/Dead Night.
Or just go to Cubs.com.
Yeah, Cubs.com. It's all right there. And if you buy a ticket through that, you get a special 7-inch, double-sided 7-inch vinyl that looks gorgeous, which with that Brown-Eyed Woman on one side, Cumberland Blues on the other side, pressed at Jack White's Third Man Pressing in Detroit,
just
Michigan.
Just a harmonic convergence of coolness right there.
That's very cool. So that's Wednesday night. And friends of the show, friends of Mr. Blotto, Paul and Mike Bulger are playing.
Oh, that's right. Are they playing out on the Gallagher Way?
They are indeed playing
way
right before the game.
Way to go, Mr. Blotto.
I know. Come on.
They are fantastic practitioners of the Grateful Dead
they
arts.
And their own. But great guys. I've known those guys for decades.
Yeah.
It's crazy. They'll be out there. And you're going to be there on Wednesday night.
I'll be there. I've got it now and then. I got to go to a game. Well, today and Wednesday. I might take Tuesday off. It's what I do, Matt.
I know it.
It's my life's work.
This hour is brought to you by Continental Toyota. Experience the Continental Toyota difference with over 400 new and used vehicles in stock. Located on LaGrange Road and I-55 in Hodgkins, ContinentalToyota.com. I will tweet out that link for the Grateful Dead giveaway. I want to ask you, Bramer, before you go.
I don't want to go.
I know. It's been fun, right? You could do this. We could do
you
this.
You only had me on for like 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. The best, the hardest core baseball fan musicians that you have dealt with in your rock and roll life.
Okay.
Because I know you've talked baseball with a ton of them.
Yes. Ben Gibbard of Death Cab for Cutie is a baseball savant. Seattle Mariners fan. But he knows, you know, the minor league system of the Chicago Cubs. It is an obsession with him.
Really?
Ben Gibbard, really deep in it. Of course, you have the Baseball Project.
Eli, write these guys down, okay?
You've got the Baseball Project with Steve Wynn of Dream Syndicate and Peter Buck of REM fan, Mike Mills sometimes. Those guys are into it.
They've written records, songs and songs and songs about baseball.
Do you have a couple minutes? I can tell you about Paul Simon, baseball fan, Simon and Garfunkel.
Paul Simon, I know, is a huge baseball fan. My friend Kevin did monitors for him for this last tour and said they would talk baseball almost every night.
So I interview him, and we go up into a dressing room, and we're talking. We start out by we both grew up in the same neighborhood. I didn't hang out with him, okay? Mm-hmm. But Paul Simon's from Forest Hills, Queens, which is a lot like Beverly or Saugeen-ish, same kind of gestalt. And we started by talking about Little League and baseball. He goes, you know, I just took my coach to a Yankees game. I said, your coach? Because, you know, Paul Simon's getting on.
Yeah.
Thinking about a coach. You're doing the math in your head. I said, your Little League coach? He goes, no, high school coach. I said, well, he must be getting on. He goes, well, he's 86 and he's in great shape. And we start talking about baseball. He said, you know, I played in high school. Now, Paul Simon, unlike myself, went to a big, he went to Forest Hills High, 5,000 kids, like Lane Tech, big student body.
Okay.
And he said, yeah, I played for my high school team. I said, you played for Forest Hills? That's a lot of guys. That's a lot of people. That's really competitive. He goes, well, wasn't that big? Yeah, no, it's a 5,000 kid school. I go, where'd you play? He said, right field. I said, were you fast? He said, yeah, I used to lead off. And then he paused and he said, I stole home once. It was the thing I was most famous for before I became famous. Paul Simon. Baseball player.
Playing right field with speed. See, right field, I was taught by Peter, Paul, and Mary, is where you play your worst player in Little League because Little League doesn't have lefties that pull.
That's right. Well, the other thing is...
It's a great song, by the way. Here in right field, it's important.
I did a whole Lin's Bin on right field sucks based on every kid in Little League who goes, no! Not right field! Anything but right field!
I don't want to play there.
I don't want to play there.
All right, other musician baseball fan. I mean, there's a million of them. I know there's a million of them.
I know Ben Gibbard's and Paul Simon,
Craig Finn of the Hold Steady is a huge one.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he did a version of Take Me Out to the Ball Game that we used to lead off Hit and Run with several years ago. We used to
Joan Jett, I Love Rock and Roll, Baltimore Orioles fan for life.
No way.
Played in 1981. a softball game with her. It was like a promotion. You know, the record company said, well, why, you know, Joan loves to play softball. Why don't we have... So the deal was Joan played with the DJs of the radio station I was working at in Albany, New York, and I had to manage and play with a team of contest winners. Hmm. So it was like a roll of the dice, you know, it was like the worst possible team. And she, even though she was left-handed, played second base. She's an awesome ball player.
Wow.
Probably still can play.
I bet. So there you go. All right. I'm going to throw a trivia question at you.
Uh-oh.
Just because I've been holding on to this and I wanted to use it today.
Okay.
There is one active major league player in MLB right now who was born in the 70s. There's only one. This is how old we are. This is the age that we have come to. Last year, there were 8 players born in the 70s. Last year. But then Adrian Beltre, Bartolo Colon,
Suzuki?
Victor Martinez, Peter Moylan, Ichiro Suzuki, Chase Utler, and Brad Ziegler have either retired or are no longer with the big league organization. And Ichiro played in one game in Japan for right. Seattle in 19. But there is one guy. Anybody know?
Old? He's got to be really old.
Mm-hmm.
No idea.
42 years old. Fernando Rodney. 906 career games last night for Fernando Rodney. Not all last night,
night. He's still throwing in the 90s.
Yeah, he is. He tied Cy Young with 906 games pitched in last night.
Cy Young, better pitcher.
You think so? Yeah. Fernando Rodney has thrown 894 innings in his 906 career games. Cy Young threw 7,356 innings in his 906 games. Just a little bit different. Just a hair. Lynn Bramer, I could talk baseball and music with you for hours, and we did.
Okay, let's go.
All right. Oh, you mean again? Another time.
Let's re-roll.
Super fun. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you, Matt. You're the best.
Appreciate you. That's Lynn Bramer from WXRT. He'll be there on Wednesday night for Grateful Dead Night. The Dodgers will be in town. We'll talk about those Dodgers with Bill Plunkett from the Orange County Register next, right here on 670 The Score. It's Hit and Run.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.